Hi, this is Vivek Kumar. Detailed summary in English of Sons and Lovers, Part of Married Life of the Morrells. In the country of Nottinghamshire, mining activity on a small scale had been going on for a pretty long time. In the latter half of the 19th century, it passed into the hands of big industrialists. The coal and iron field of Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire was discovered. A big industrial concern, Carstone, Waite and Company, dug many mines there. To accommodate a great number of miners working in these mines, Carstone, Waite and Company erected the squares and the bottoms. The bottoms was a small residential unit in the Brook Valley near the village Bestwood. It consisted of 6 blocks of miners' dwellings with 12 houses in a block. The houses themselves were quite substantial and decent. They had very attractive little front gardens. The families, however, dwelt not in the parlors facing the front, but in the kitchen at the back of the houses, looking upon the back alleys filled with the pits. In these alleys, the children played and the women gossiped and the men smoked. So, in spite of the fact that these houses were apparently so beautiful, they were not quite desirable to live in. Mrs. Gertrude Morrell was 1 year old and had been married for 8 years. She had come down to Bottoms in July, and in September she expected her husband's third. She did not enjoy much her contact with the Bottoms women, for on account of her middle class inheritance, she thought herself superior to them. It satisfied her vanity to live in an inn for which she had to pay a slightly higher rent. Mrs. Morrell came of a good old family of coppers, eyes and their broad brow. She had inherited from them a proud, unyielding temper. When she was 19, a young man, John Field, courted her, but later rejected her in favor of his lady, a 40-year-old widow with property. Mrs. Morrell could never forget this humiliation. Walter Morrell, her husband, was a miner. She met him for the first time when she was 23 and he 27. Mr. Morrell was then well set up, erect, and very smart. He had shining, heavy black hair and a black beard that had never been shaved. His cheeks were ruddy. He laughed often and laughed heartily. He was full of color and animation. He was pleasant with everybody. He had a rich fund of soft, non-intellectual and warm humor. Mrs. Morrell was quite his opposite. She loved ideas and was considered very intellectual. What she liked most of all was an argument on religion or philosophy and politics with some educated man, and she was deeply religious. She met Walter Morrell at a Christmas party and was just attracted with his dialect. The next Christmas they were married, and for 3 months she was perfectly happy. For 6 months she was very happy, but soon this happiness began to fade away. Temperamentally, they were too unlike each other to be harmoniously adjusted. Sometimes she tried to talk to him seriously. She saw him listen attentively and differentially, but without understanding. This killed her efforts at a finer intimacy. Some discoveries Mrs. Morrell made about her husband made her feel quite bitter about him. She discovered that Walter had lied to her that the house they were living in had belonged to him. He had not paid even his furniture bills. Her middle-class superiority was shattered and she was disillusioned. Their family life was badly disrupted. There were very few moments of harmony, and these were the moments when Walter did things with his hands. He loved making and repairing things. William was just born when Mrs. Morrell's faith in life was shaken and she was feeling dreary and lonely. She made much of the child and the father was jealous. Once when William was alone, he clipped off his hair. This aggrieved and infuriated her. The estrangement between the husband and the wife gradually increased, and Mrs. Morrell drew towards William for affection. William, too, loved her so much. Once in a fair week, he got two caps with moss roses on them for her. She left the fair slightly early, and after that he could not enjoy himself at all. Once Walter Morrell went for a 10-mile walk across the Nottingham fields in the company of one of his friends, Jerry Purdy. Jerry was a man whom Mrs. Morrell had just hated. Walter really enjoyed the excursion, but he returned home drunk. There followed a bitter quarrel between the husband and the wife, culminating in Mrs. Morrell's being shut out of the house. It was during the period she was expecting Paul. It was a magnificent moonlight night in August. As she walked down the garden path, the child boiled within her. She was delirious. Then she became aware of the tall white lilies reeling in the moonlight. She was affected by their presence. She and the child, along with her, melted in the mixing pot of the moonlight, and she rested with the birds and the lilies and houses all swinging together in a kind of swoon. When she came to herself, she returned to her house, got the door opened, warmed and soothed herself, and then attended to the old jobs left to be done. Critical comments. This chapter introduces us to the setting of the story. The story begins in a coal mining village surrounded by countryside. This is very significant in Lawrence's novels. In this background, we learn a good deal about the Morrell family. Walter Morrell and Gertrude Morrell are at loggerheads, as her puritanical outlook clashes with his sensuous nature. The two have been married for 8 years, but Lawrence does not busy himself in attempting a minute account of their married life. Mr. Morrell is a man of action rather than of thought or deeply felt emotion, and his intellect cannot match his wife's. Mrs. Morrell's attitude and her turning from him to her children, especially to William at this stage, to compensate for her dreary life and constant poverty, together with his drinking, have split the two of them irreconcilably. They have constant rows, as a result of which Mr. Morrell often grows violent. Now, this is chapter number 2, The Birth of Paul and Another Battle. If the frequent quarrels between Mr. and Mrs. Morrell wrecked Mrs. Morrell's happiness, they proved even more damaging to Mr. Morrell. His self-assurance diminished after each encounter. Physically also he shrank. His physique seemed to contract along with his pride and moral strength. After the quarrel described at the end of chapter 1, Mr. Morrell became a little penitent. He tried to make up for his earlier misconduct by doing little things for her and making her situation easier. I was chilly and raining when Paul was born. Mrs. Morrell was seriously ill, but Mr. Morrell was at the pub getting drunk. Even when he came home, he finished his meals and sat for 20 minutes before he went upstairs to face his wife. It was a real struggle for him, and he expressed himself clumsily. He blessed the child, but blessed by rote, pretending paternal emotion, which he did not feel just then. He wanted to kiss his wife, and she wanted to be kissed, but he dared not, and she dismissed him. Mr. Hitton, the clergyman, often came to the Morrells over tea. Mrs. Morrell discussed with him religion and philosophy, and Walter, unable to participate, felt offended. One day, when Mr. Hitton was there talking to Mrs. Morrell, Walter entered, feeling rather savage. When the minister inquired if he was feeling very tired, he asked him to touch his singlet. Soaked with his sweat, he naturally wanted to take pride in his foil, but Mrs. Morrell hated him for winning and playing for sympathy. Mrs. Morrell was once out for a walk. In her arms lay the delicate baby. She had not wanted this child to come, and there it lay in her arms and pulled at her heart. She felt as if the novel string that had connected the frail little baby with her had not been broken. She held the child close to her face and breast. She said that with all her force, with all her soul, she would make up to it for having brought into the world unloved. In the crimson light of the sun, she felt anxious for the child. She did not know why, but she suddenly said that she would call him Paul. In the meantime, the gulf between the husband and the wife had widened. Once Mr. Morrell came home and asked if there was something to eat, Mrs. Morrell gave a rude reply. Walter said that she should wait on him. "Never, me lord, I would wait on a dog at the door first," retorted Mrs. Morrell. Enraged, Walter jerked at the drawer which fell on him. He flung it at her. A corner of the drawer caught her brow, and it began to bleed rather profusely. Walter immediately became tender with her and wanted to tend the wound, but she only pushed him away. All along she was holding the baby tightly clasped to her. Walter saw a drop of blood from her wound fall into the baby's fragile, glistening hair. Then another drop fell, and Walter felt it would soak through the baby's scalp. He watched, fascinated, feeling it soaked in, then finally his manhood broke. The whole of the next day, he lay and suffered like a sulking dog. In his quarrel, he had hurt himself most, and he was the more damaged because he would never say a word to her, express his sorrow. And after this quarrel, he was virtually alienated. A few days later, Walter Morrell pinched a sixpence from his wife's purse, obviously for a drink. It was discovered, but he denied having stolen the money. Mrs. Morrell was again severe on him. Walter got ready and left the house, threatening never to come back. It made the children little anxious, but he returned at night. Mrs. Morrell knew very well he could not go. As she saw him slink quickly through the inner doorway, holding his bundle, she laughed to herself, but her heart was bitter because she had loved him. Critical comments. The estrangement of feelings between Walter Morrell and Gertrude Morrell continues. The house pervades with tension Mrs. Morrell's puritanical outlook cannot tolerate. Mr. Morrell's drinking habit and his act of theft from her purse. Yet she is helpless, for she depends on his income, so she has no alternative but to run the house in all circumstances. However, her hatred for her husband is deep. When Paul is born, her attention is transferred to her children all the more, especially to Paul. The incident of the drawer, when some of Mrs. Morrell's blood drops onto Paul's head, is, as it were, a baptism by blood, and is symbolic of the relationship that will develop between the two. This is a sign of the bond of blood between the two. Now, this is the next chapter, chapter number 3, the casting off of Morrell, the taking on of William. A little while after the last episode, Mr. Morrell took ill from an ill inflammation of the brain and got confined to bed. During this time, there was a comparative lull in the house, but it was a lull before the storm. The entire coal mining community came to the help of the Morrells. The clubs donated 17 shillings a week. The pit foreman put aside a small portion of the stall's profits. The immediate neighbors made soups and gave eggs. But for this generous help from one and all, Mrs. Morrell would have incurred debts that would have dragged her down. During Mr. Morrell's recuperation, both he and his wife tried to recover their initial cordiality, but it was really over between them. Mrs. Morrell's love was gradually transferred to her children, and Mr. Morrell was alienated. However, out of this strange interval of peace, Mrs. Morrell conceived another child who was born 17 months after Paul. It was named Arthur. The child was the favorite of the father, for whenever Mr. Morrell came home, he immediately took him to his arms and played with him. As William grew bigger and stronger and more active, Paul, always rather delicate and quiet, got slimmer and trotted after his mother like her shadow. He was usually active and interested, but sometimes he would have fits of depression. Once William had a quarrel with a neighboring boy, the son of Mrs. Anthony, who came with a complaint. Mr. Morrell wanted to give him a sound thrashing, but Mrs. Morrell defended him and prevented his heavy hand from striking him and ordered him to go out of the house. Though trivial in itself, the difference over this incident virtually marked the casting off of Mr. Morrell. After this, he was merely reduced to an economic unit, a supplier of funds. When the children were old enough to be left alone, Mrs. Morrell joined the Women's Guild. Often she wrote papers for it. Her children were extremely fond of these activities of hers. They derived a great deal of amusement from the stories she told them after she returned from a meeting. William was only 13 when, through the Women's Guild, he got a job in the cooperative office. Mr. Morrell wanted to send him to the pit, but Mrs. Morrell was determined not to make him a minor. William was an active boy. Once he won a prize at a race, a glass inkstand, and the mother was proud of him. She knew he had run for her. He learned dancing also. Often the girls he made friends with at his dance came to Mrs. Morrell to inquire about him. But she was always rude to them. She said she did not like those girls. She also made fun of the letters they wrote. At 19, William got a job in Nottingham at 30 shillings a week. Paul, in the meanwhile, was getting on well with his French and German. He was learning these languages from the clergymen. Annie was studying to be a teacher, and Arthur was at the boards school, and they said that he would soon get a scholarship for the high school at Nottingham. After a year, William got a job at London at £120 a year. Mrs. Morrell was glad at his success, but separation from him made her sad. Now, critical comments. In this chapter, Morrell is practically discarded in the family. William's progress becomes a matter of great interest and attraction to the mother, but she does not approve of the girls that he takes out because it seems that she wants to be the only woman in his life. She is deeply upset at William's departure, as her life has centered largely on him. She and her husband are now practically estranged. Now, chapter number 4, The Young Life of Paul. Paul was a handsome child, but physically he was a wreck, being slight and small. He had grey eyes, he was pale and quiet, but his eyes were most alert. His soul seemed always attractive to his mother. Gradually he gained strength. Paul shared the game of his sister Annie. One day he broke her doll, Arabella, and then proposed to perform its sacrifice. He in fact proposed that the doll be burned to ashes. It shows that Paul had a strange sadistic instinct in him. Pouring a little paraffin, he set the doll on fire. He watched with wicked satisfaction the drops of wax melt off the broken forehead of Arabella and drop like sweet into the flame. He was glad that he had succeeded in making the sacrifice, and what was even more horrifying was the fact that he smashed its limbs under the stove. The life of Morrells was as bad as it could be. The head of the family came home drunk and would often give a black eye to his wife. William would come home from work when he was still there and would look down at his father with glaring eyes. The drunken father would shout at him, "I will rattle my fist about thee," and William would put his fists ready. Mrs. Morrill's intervention alone prevented them from coming to blows. Paul looked forward for such a scuffle with relish. There was horror in the house and a sense of blood too. Paul hated his father. "Lord, let my father die," he prayed every night. Mrs. Morrill could not bear life with her husband, and the children saved her misery. When he would not come home early, she would get anxious for him, but Paul thought her silly for waiting for such a man. Then the man would turn up and take his dinner in a brutal manner. Paul won a prize in a competition in a child's paper, but there was hardly any ground for conversation between the father and the son. However, they loved to cluster about him when he made fuses or did some other physical work in the home. They helped him to do it. He made the fuses to blast the coal. Sometimes Mr. Morrill would tell a story to the children. He had a warm way of doing it, and then the children enjoyed being with him. Paul often suffered from bronchitis. This ailment drew his mother towards him. She hardly hoped that Paul would live long. She always felt a mixture of anguish in her love for him. The boy responded with warmth to the love of his mother. Her physical movements pleased him. Often he slept with his mother during an illness, and this was always a passionate joy for him. Sleep is most perfect when it is shared with a beloved. The warmth, the security and peace of soul, the utter comfort from the touch of the other, needs the sleep so that it takes the body and soul completely in its healing. Paul lay against her and slept and got better, whilst she, always a bad sleeper, fell later on into a profound sleep that seemed to give her faith. The love of Paul for his mother has been emphasized by the novelist. Paul pleased his mother by getting back berries, which he hunted so avidly. He would go out far to find them. Because it pleased his mother, William was evidently jealous of his brother because he drew away the mother from him. Often, Paul was sent out to bring the wages of his father, which were disbursed by Mr. Braithwaite and his clerk, Mr. Winterbottom. He hated the way he got the money. He was so hypersensitive. And at times the fun in his eyes roused his mother and made her sleeping soul lift up its head a moment surprised. The narration turns to William, who had gone out to London. He sent one day a little money to his mother. He had made friends there and was exchanging lessons with a Frenchman. He often went out with girls and wasted his money. Now he was coming home for celebrating Christmas. They made grand preparations for the occasion. Mrs. Morrill got busy preparing a magnificent cake and other dainty things. The coming of William by train has been described vividly and feelingly. He brings a lot of presents for the members of the family. He had foregone the prospects of visiting the Mediterranean for the sake of being at home with his mother. Now, critical comments. In the absence of William, Paul becomes the center of attraction of Mrs. Morrill. In this chapter, we see Mrs. Morrill's relationship with Paul developing. He is sensitive to his mother's feelings, and they derive great comfort from each other. Especially when William is no longer at home, but the children are growing up in an atmosphere of insecurity. The family is compelled to live in poverty because of Mr. Morrill's habit of drinking. Now, this is the next chapter, chapter number 5. Paul launches into life. It was a year after William had gone to London Paul had become quite clever at the brush. He had left the school but had not got work. Mrs. Morrell was suddenly given the news that Walter had met with an accident. There was a compound fracture in his leg. He had been taken to the hospital in a serious condition. Mrs. Morrell regretted the accident, yet in her heart of hearts, where the love should have been burning, here was a blank. It was reported that Morrell had been groaning with pain, but there was something manly about him, and gradually his condition improved. The neighbors once again came to the help of Morrells and did all kind of work for them. Paul was now 14 and was looking for work. His face was becoming rugged like William's, but it was extraordinary mobile. He suffered very much from the first contact with things. Now that he felt he had to go out into life, he went through agonies of self-consciousness. He knew French, German, and mathematics, and was a clever painter for his age. He was called for an interview at Jordan's manufacturer of surgical appliances at Nottingham. He went there in the company of his mother, and though he could neither read the letters properly nor answer well the questions, he was engaged at 8 shillings a week. His work was to copy out the letters. It was rather tiring to go all the way to Nottingham from his Keston home and back again every day. However, he liked the place. Particularly, he got quite intimate with girls. He felt proud when he brought home his 8 shillings. It was a routine for him to tell his mother whatever had happened during the day. His life story, like the Arabian Nights, was told night after night to his own mother. It was almost as if it were her own life. William was doing well at London. He sent to his mother the photograph of the girl he was going with. He lovingly called her Gypsy or Jip. The photograph showed the bare shoulders of a handsome brunette. Mrs. Morrell did not think it was in good taste to send such a photograph. Then some more photographs were sent along with a note from the girl herself. But the mother did not even approve of these. Now critical comments. Paul launches into life. He now secures a job, which means that his mother is not so dependent financially on her husband. Actually, it is Mrs. Morrell who launches Paul into life. The relationship between Paul and his mother has developed to the stage when they act as lovers on occasions rather than as mother and son. The importance of the mind in the life of the Morrells is sharply brought home to us when Mr. Morrell has a serious accident. The family is saved from financial disaster by contributions from fellow miners. Now, this is chapter number 6, Death in the Family. Arthur Morrell was growing up and he resembled his father in many ways. He hated study and loved sport. He was handsome too, but was self-centered. As Morrell's manners got worse and worse, his habits somewhat disgusting, there grew a resentment among the children against their father. Soon, Jip arrived in the family of Morrells. She had positively shocking manners. Her behavior towards William was shocking. Annie played the part of a maid in a way. It appeared that Jip posed as a superior person among the inferiors. The members of the family were shocked at such an ugly behavior. She had been employed in certain low positions in a London office. Soon, Paul and his mother went out of Mrs. Lever's farm. In the way, they experienced the beauty and glow of the nature. While reaching there, Paul met a 13-year-old girl called Miriam. who played a vital role in his life. There, Paul and his mother met Mr. and Mrs. Levers, Edgar, the eldest son, Geoffrey, and Maurice. Miriam is seen there all life, the life that is full of maidenhood. Paul reacted warmly and responsibly to it. It is discovered that the girl could recite poetry too very well. In the beginning, it appeared as if the girl was resentful of Paul, but psychologically speaking, it was the beginning of love which struck deeper roots. Soon, the mother and the son returned home from the far. Here, the glow of nature has been described in its ebullient warmth. An affable bliss was felt by them, though not without a natural pang, which is deep in the heart. His heart was full of happiness till it hurt. His mother has to chatter because she too wanted to cry with happiness. William, Lily, and Paul went out for a walk. Paul threaded daisies in her jet black hair. Big spangles of white and yellow, and just a pink touch of ragged robin. "Now you look like a young witch woman," he told her. Mrs. Morrell is rather skeptical about the success of the affair of William and Lily. She observed thoughtfully on matrimony in the following words: "Nothing is as bad as a marriage. That is hopeless failure. Mine was bad enough. God knows and ought to teach you something, but it might have been worse by a long chalk." There was the momentary consideration to be taken into account before Jip and William got married. Jip, however, is nothing but a rag doll. William had a kind of premonition of his death. "Why, William," said his mother, "you are not going to die, so why talk about it?" One morning, Mrs. Morrell got a telegram from London. William was seriously ill. She went to Elmer's Inn, where William lived. There he lay on the death bed. He looked at her, but did not see her. He died ultimately in a dreadful paroxysm. The news was flashed home with the request for money. It upset the entire family. Paul went to the pit to fetch father. He did not cry like others. Paul followed with his mother, and he stood with his arm around her waist in the inner doorway. William was buried, and Mrs. Morrell remained shut off with grief. She could only brood on her dead son. He had been left to die so cruelly. Paul, too, was not well, and the mother became anxious on his account. But he recovered soon. William had been a prophet. Mrs. Morrell had a little present, and a letter from Lily at the chapter was closed coolly. Now, critical comments. Mrs. Morrell gradually transfers her love and attention from William to Paul, especially after William's death. All her hopes are now centered on Paul. When they visit Levers Farm, there are suggestions of an adult love between them, but it is here that Paul's affair with Miriam begins. This affair becomes the cause of much pleasure and pain to both the mother and the son. Now, this is part 2, chapter number 7, Lad and Girl Love. The second part of the novel opens by extending our awareness of the life lived at Willey Farm. The first chapter is important from the point of view of the psychology of adolescence. Miriam, being a bourgeoning girl, and Paul, the sprouting youth. Willey Farm, the home of Miriam, has been described with its natural surroundings, and the details of the place have been meticulously painted by the novelist. Miriam, with whom Paul falls in love, has been vividly described. The girl was romantic in her soul. Everywhere was a Walter Scott heroine being loved by men with helmets or with plumes in their caps. She herself was something of a princess turned into a swine girl in her own imagination. And she was afraid lest this boy, who looked something like a Walter Scott hero, who could paint and speak French and knew what algebra meant, and who went by train to Nottingham every day, should consider her simply as the swine girl. Unable to perceive the princess beneath, so she held aloof. She was a church-going girl, deeply religious, though she revolted against the vulgarity of the choir girls and the curate. She did not care for birth and wealth. Even her soul, so strong for rhapsody, was not enough. She must have something to reinforce her pride, because she felt different from other people. She craved for recognition through learning, and Paul had learning. She hated the male sex, but Paul certainly was different. She felt that he was weak because he looked sickly. Then she would be stronger than he and able to take care of him. Miriam at that time was barely 16, very beautiful with her warm coloring, her gravity, her eyes dilating suddenly like an ecstasy. She was attached to Paul, though apparently she kept away from him. The farmhouse looked a little old because it was originally a laborer's cottage. Paul observed every object keenly. The girl moved about in rhapsodic way. She felt the impact of the personality of Paul. There is a short scene which describes Paul on the swing. As Paul was swinging, there was something attractive to her in him. For the moment, but he was nothing but a piece of swinging stuff, not a particle of him that did not swing. Miriam gets surcharged with a strange emotion, so much so that she expresses her emotion by catching hold of her child brother Hubert and kissing him with great intensity. Her intensity, which could leave no emotion on a normal plane, irritated the youth into a frenzy. A change came in the life of Paul. He became quite friendly with Ease, the brother of Miriam. Then there was his mother, whom he loved like a lover. The importance to him both of Miriam and Mrs. Morrell has been described in the following words. From his mother he drew the life warmth, the strength to produce. Miriam urged this warmth and intensity like a white light. His love for Miriam grows, but it is a spiritual love, a friendship, and not at all physical. It is intense but platonic. There are a number of beautiful short scenes describing this boy and girl love in beautiful natural surroundings. Mrs. Morrell was not happy with coming of Miriam in the life of her son. Her dislike of Miriam also reacts on the son. He was hurt between his love of Miriam and the knowledge that his mother fretted. The Oedipus in Paul gets vehement. He is intensely drawn towards his mother. Love for Miriam, on the other side, assumes the dimensions of a gangrene. Paul is torn by this conflict and suffers terrible anguish. He can give up neither the mother nor Miriam, who has now become a need of his soul. A fierce struggle rages between Paul. He was on intestine battle, and he became cruel to her, Miriam, because of it. The saddest in her nature now came to the forefront. Now he started letting her. The family of the Morrells thought of going out for a holiday and rented the Malathrope cottage at a short distance. Paul was wild with joy for his mother's sake. Further, we are told, on the whole, he stuck to her as if he was her man. Now, critical comments. The relations between Paul and Miriam develop, but they look on each other more as friends than as lovers. Miriam's deeply religious outlook and searching for a communion of their souls above the physical plane cannot satisfy Paul's desire, and so Paul often suffers conflicting emotions. This conflict is also augmented by the strong mother pull experienced by Paul. Paul-Miriam relationship is doomed because Paul is too much enclosed in the cocoon of his mother's protectiveness. Mrs. Morrell is also jealous of Miriam because she wants Paul for herself. Chapter number 8. Strife in Love. Paul's sexual predicament is not treated in isolation but within the framework of ordinary domestic and social life. Thus the chapter opens with Arthur, the youngest son of Morrells. After finishing his apprenticeship, he got a job on the electrical plant at Minton Pit. Paul has a suspicion and so gets jealous that his mother loved him because of the fact that a mother usually loves her youngest of all. Suddenly the news is brought home that he, Arthur, had gone away with his friend, Jack Brand, and got enlisted. Though he now stated in a letter that he hated to be in the army, Paul is a sadist as ever, takes a sadistic view by observing that Arthur would look well in uniform, but both the mother and the father hate the very idea of their son being in the army. It is felt that the son was irresponsible like his father. Mrs. Morrell visits the castle and by chance casts a glance at the pictures painted by Paul. She explains there hang Paul pictures. She knew them as if they were painted on her heart. Paul had won a high prize for one of them. Now Mrs. Clara Davis is introduced for the first time by the novelist. She is the daughter of our old friend of Mrs. Levers, the mother of Miriam. Her husband Baxter Davis is a smith in Mr. Lawden's factory and makes the irons for cripple instruments. Mrs. Davis has got separated from her husband, and this fact excites the interest of Paul, a sadist to the backbone. He hates the man, and incidentally there is this similarity between him and Mrs. Davis. Baxter Davis, too, hated Paul from the day he had known him. The Davers had no children. After separation, Clara Davis went to live with her brother and Davis with his sister. Clara, as pointed out in the initial stages, appears to be without a grain of taste. She also is dissatisfied. Paul remarks about her in the following manner. Look at her mouth. Look at her mouth, made for passion, and the very setback of her throat. There is a fierceness in some latent reason of her psyche. Above all, she seemed to be a man-hater. Paul and Miriam continued much to be together. Miriam now acted for a physical feel of Paul as a man. She wanted to run her hands down his sides. She actually put her two hands on his sides and ran them quickly down. He might have been an object. She never realized the male he was. However, the cruelty in Paul caught to kill the soul of Miriam. He bled her like the girls. She is jealous of her hold on Paul. She says, she is not like an ordinary woman who can leave me my share in him. She wants to absorb him. She wants to draw him only and absorb him till there is nothing left to him. Even for himself, he will never be a man on his own foot. She will suck him up. Paul and Miriam are drawn and repelled in turn due to the strange psychology of sex. The chapter is therefore of great psychological interest. Morel is a man wronged by his wife despite his virility. It is an enigma which certainly baffles us. The spring sets in and Paul's youthful spirits revive with its onset. Miriam suffers exquisite gain because Paul is psychologically cruel to her. Moreover, Mrs. Morel does not like that a girl should absorb her son. She must have her own share in the game, that is, Paul. Miriam caused Mrs. Morel great suffering, and Paul, knowing it, started hating the girl. Paul thought that Miriam wanted him as if she were fingering the very protoplasm of life. He therefore told her that it was just friendship that he wanted. She felt astonished, for she expected something concrete and deeper than that. The chapter is remarkable for the development of Oedipus complex. Paul's mother does not like his goings on with Miriam. Paul ultimately feels that his mother was the only supreme thing in the world for him. Paul is disgusted with his father and very nearly comes to physical blows with him. He makes a sinister suggestion to his mother that she must sleep with any and not with his father. However, the mother firmly declares that she would sleep in her own bed. Paul suffered from great spiritual anguish as his soul was torn between his love for his mother and his love for Miriam. He could have neither of the two. He pressed his face upon the pillow in a fury of misery, and yet somewhere in soul he was at peace because he still loved his mother best. It has peace for bitter resignation. Now the critical comments. Paul is attracted towards the physical charm of Clara, but she at first keeps herself aloof. There is tension building up between Paul and Miriam. Miriam's love is on the spiritual plane, but Paul feels an awakening physical desire for her. Paul actually does not understand his real passion. His passion remains frustrated. Mrs. Morel has begun to show signs of illness. Paul is deeply worried about her health. He knows his mother's dislike for Miriam, so he moves away from Miriam. An aspect of the working condition of the miners is also presented. They used to work in groups and therefore were paid as a team according to their productivity. Thus, there is the description of Morel sharing the week's earnings with his mates. Now, we will discuss chapter number 9, Defect of Miriam. Paul has a feeling that Miriam wants to absorb him by some sort of sucking love. Miriam has a premonition that her love is going to be reduced into cinders. She foresees a tragedy in future. Paul says to her that she wants to whittle the soul out of things as if she were a beggar. He becomes cruel in telling her, "You don't want to love. Your eternal and abnormal craving is to be loved. You are not positive. You are negative. You absorb, absorb as if you must fill yourself up with love because you have got a shortage somewhere." Miriam is shocked at his cruel gesture. He feels that she loves him more than her. He finds her deficient. He makes her suffer and knows that there is something of the foreignness of another influence. His place is certainly with his mother. Miriam is also aware of the interest of the mother in him. "This is your mother," she said. "I know she never liked me." Miriam was the threshing floor on which he threshed out all the beliefs. Paul in his affair with Miriam becomes self-conscious. Miriam becomes aware of the hostility between them. This episode is the alternate game of hatred and love. Paul meets Clara at the Willey farm, who somehow seems to make the things there look mediocre. She is a new dimension intruding upon their love. The young starts taking new and deep interest in her. He gets deeply absorbed in her physical charm. He gets an idea that she is also interested in songs, but it must be a trained voice at that. He sees some kind of misery writ large on her face. On the whole, he becomes very anxious about her. They go about to enjoy the floral charm of nature. Again, there is the interference of the mother. Paul laments the fact that the mother is not young. Why can't men have a young mother? She tells him, "I am a bit old and you will have to put up with it, that is all." He tells his mother that Clara is 30, whereas he is going to be 23. Annie is getting married. Mr. Morrell feels that she must be a fool to marry. Arthur is also present in the home. He looks impressive in the uniform. Paul promises his mother that he will not marry and live with her. Soon Annie and Arthur go away from home. The mother's place is significant in the triangle of antagonism between Paul, Clara, and Miriam. A kind of discussion ensues about God and religion. Paul says that it is not religious to be religious. According to Miriam, one should be religious in everything. Paul believes God does not know things. He is things, and I am sure he is not soulful. Paul says to Miriam that he is prepared to give spirit love and not embodied passion to her. He has given her what he should give to a holy nun as a mystic monk. At this stage, Clara awakens the manly flame. Essentially, he belongs to Miriam. Critical comments. As Clara's attraction for Paul is more physical, so Paul is attracted towards her. His love affair with Clara has begun, but his links with Miriam are not broken. Miriam does not want to marry Paul, for she thinks they are too young. Paul is torn between Clara and Miriam, but he is bitterly worried about his mother's illness. He cannot marry so long as his mother is alive. Now, the next chapter, chapter number 10, this is Clara. Mrs. Morrell is jubilant over Paul's selling a painting for 20 guineas. But 20 guineas for a bit of a painting, as he knocked off in an hour or two, she exclaims. The mother takes the Oedipus interest in him. She remodels a suit of William for Paul, and in this way seeks to build up the image of her eldest son, who is dead. Paul has already assumed the role of the head of the family and displaced his father completely. While Mrs. Morrell wants her son to climb up socially, Paul himself likes better the common people who have the warmth of life about them. Paul goes to Clara's place. She is working at a Jenny at the time. She lives with her mother, Mrs. Redford. There seems to be a mystery about her. She is reserved. She lives under the eternal insult of working in a factory. There is an air of superiority about her. Paul is tempted to call her Penelo. She is like some remorseful angel in her dreary home. Paul secures for her a job in Mrs. Jordan's factory, and so he now comes in frequent contact with her and comes to know more about her. He becomes aware of her physical charm, her shoulders, her arms, and the curves of her breast all fascinate him. He tells her that her husband Davis had treated her in a degrading manner. Paul is sympathetic towards her, but feels that he still belongs to Miriam. There is some kind of coolness in Clara. A mystery surrounds her. Sometimes she is familiar and intimate, but at other times cold and distant. This alternate rhythm of their relationship is described in great detail through short scenes placed in the midst of nature's surroundings, we are also given short glimpses of Paul's relations with other women who work in the factory. They call her the Queen of Sheba because of her proud attitude. Paul tells her that Miriam wanted the soul of his body and that her love was too spiritual. Clara tells him that he was wrong. Miriam wanted him physically. It is better he tried her. This opens the eyes of Paul. Critical comments. Paul can neither break completely with Miriam nor go as far as an engagement. He seems exhausted with the situation. However, Clara gradually comes towards Paul, who is very excited by her. She seems to be able to offer him the kind of physical love that Miriam could not. Paul feels that his relationship with Clara is perfectly honorable. The Baxter affair also comes to light. Paul's reference that Baxter still loves Clara foretells her eventual reconciliation with him. Now, chapter number 11, the test on Miriam. Paul takes stock of his emotional condition. He thinks of his overstrong virginity. Clara had told him that Miriam even wanted him physically. He cannot forget her words. Miriam really loved him, but he had made a mess of his life. As far as sex was concerned, he wants to return to Miriam. Mrs. Morrell does not like that her son should go back again to Miriam. She could not forgive her. Miriam killed the joy and the warmth in him. He had been such a jolly lad. Paul feels like some spiritual cripple. He feels they have been too fierce in their purity. Miriam feels the conflict ragging within him and is sorry for him. It is a perversity to shrink from the thing they want. So she decides to yield to his physical requests. Miriam agrees on having him, but Paul thought her eyes, full of the dark, impersonal fire of desire, did not belong to her. A number of scenes show their love making, and in each one we are conscious of the deep anguish which the lovers suffer, for despite themselves they are drifting towards a total break. The consummation of their love takes place in odd circumstances. It has been described by the writer in the following words. First, he saw only her beauty and was blind with it. Then he wanted her. But as he went forward, her hands lifted in a little pleading movement and he looked at her face and stopped. She lay as if she had given herself up to sacrifice. There was her body for him, but the look at the back of her eyes, like a creature awaiting immolation, arrested him and all his blood fell back. She only realized that she was doing something for him. He could hardly bear it. She lay to be sacrificed for him because she loved him so much, and he had to sacrifice her. And afterwards, he loved her to the last fiber of his being, but he wanted somehow to cry. Thus, the influence of Clara draws Paul away from Miriam. He tells Miriam that their affair should come to an end, for he could not marry her, and it was wrong to go on like that without marriage. Paul attempts at breaking free from the influence of mother love. Critical comments. Paul does not feel happy even at the submission of Miriam. He is bitterly disappointed because she is not roused at all. In fact, she regards her submission as a sacrifice only. Paul is frustrated, for he had hoped that their union would be completed by their sexual act, but his frustration prompts him to break with her. This satisfies and pleases Mrs. Morrell. Paul's fascination for Clara also alienates him from Miriam. Now, this is chapter number 12, Passion. The title of the chapter is apt, for it deals with Paul's physical passion for Clara. Paul is not thinking of making his livelihood through art. He can make and sell designs for embroideries. However, his thoughts are now engrossed with Clara, his Queen of Sheba. During one of their walks, he touches her, and both of them stand flaming with blushes. They go together to enjoy a film show. He takes her hand in his. She sees his dark, mad eyes filled with passion. Clara finds him rough with rough-hewn features, like the common pupils. She tells him that she is 30, whereas Paul is only 25. Once during a walk, her breast came against his body. He was mad with passion. He told her and covered her face with kisses. Her mouth fused with his. Their bodies were sealed. Clara's attitude towards him changes and she is more familiar with him. Henceforth, she looks delighted and easy and smooth. In certain of the scenes, one can even say that she is the lover. He tells his mother that she is so nice, not a bit common. Mrs. Morell is not afraid of her and so encourages this new relationship so that he may forget Miriam. Paul brings her to his house to meet his parents. Clara is impressed by the hospitality of the old collier. After this, Miriam comes to meet Clara and it suddenly dawns upon her that it was accomplished between them. They already had sex relations. Paul feels guilty towards Miriam. She is bitter with him and is suffering a great deal. He also hates the bloodhound quality in Miriam. She wants to suck the soul of others. He stands full of conflict. Here we find the drama of mad and stark passion. Though Clara is very gentle, almost loving, yet he tries to treat her distantly. She insists upon his putting on an evening suit and taking her to a film show. In the darkness of the hall, Paul feels himself bathed with hot passion. They are late. The train for home departs and Paul has no option but to stay at Clara's. Mrs. Redford is sore and is rather sarcastic in her words. There isn't room in this house for two such body dazzlers if you fly your kites that high. Critical comments. The relations between Paul and Clara gradually develop. Clara responds to Paul's love as Miriam had never done. Paul had achieved a soul union with Miriam, but a physical union with Clara. Mrs. Morell also accepts Clara as she never accepted Miriam because she feels that Clara will not make demands on Paul's soul that Miriam had. But Mrs. Morell warns Paul that he will soon tire of Clara. Now, this is the next chapter, chapter number 12. Baxter Davis. Baxter Baxter, Dawes, Davis. Baxter Davis is Clara's husband. He lives in cheap lodgings. He works in Jordan's factory as Smith. He usually behaves like an enemy towards Paul, but Paul often tries to go to him and be friendly with him. During the course of a conversation one day, he taunts Paul about his visit to the theater with Clara. The former feels insulted and in a very awkward position. He throws a glass of beer in his face. He makes an attack on Paul, but the situation is saved due to the intervention of the barmaid, and Baxter Davis is turned out of the bar. The young man finds himself in an odd position. He looks at Baxter Davis with contempt and pity. He tells his mother of the incident and she is much worried. Clara, who hates her husband, exhorts Paul to fight him, but he says that he has scarcely any sense of the feast. She then advises him not to expose himself to danger unnecessarily. One day, Paul and Baxter Davis come to blows in the office. Baxter insults even the boss. Thomas Jordan, the boss, dismisses him from service. He is tried in the court but is set free by the court because Paul's statement is favorable to him. At home, Paul tells his mother that he loved Clara deeply, but at the same time he feels that he wrongs his women sometimes. He could not possibly marry them. Clara still loves him passionately. A scene of lovemaking between Paul and Clara takes place. She stood clasping him and caressing him, and he was something unknown to her, something almost uncanny. She wanted to soothe him into forgetfulness. In the spring, they went together to the seaside. There, She senses the desire of Paul to free himself from her. The man finds lovemaking during daytime stifling. The fact is, he is tired merely of physical love. His relationship with Clara is too superficial. He cannot marry her, for she is not yet divorced from her husband. But Clara does not want complete break from her husband. He still belongs to her essentially, and she wants still to retain him. Back again to their place, they again come across Baxter Davis. He felt puzzled and helpless and angry. Clara, however, owns that when she has Baxter, she has him whole, all of him. But she does not have the whole of Paul. Paul and Clara continue with their affair, but it is evident that they are getting tired of each other. There is another confrontation between Paul and Baxter. The latter, Baxter, is keen to fight, and the former, that is Paul, owns that he does not know how to fight. Instinctively, Paul catches hold of the neck of Baxter, which makes him yield. Davis starts kicking his opponent. Mrs. Morrell comes to know of the fight and is much pained and worried. Mrs. Morrell is ill. She consults a lady doctor at Nottingham. Her heart and digestion are wrong. Paul takes the illness of his mother very seriously. A tumor is there. It might even be cancer. Paul is much worried. There is some financial trouble also. He is able to give her monthly only 8 guineas. On returning home, Mrs. Morrell is glad to see the sunflowers in her garden. Critical comments. In spite of heightening relations between Paul and Clara, Clara is not satisfied with Paul, for she wants a complete possession of Paul, but he does not give himself wholly to her, as Baxter had done. Paul admits that he cannot give himself wholly to any woman, as first love is his mother. The result is that Clara also gradually parts with him. Once more, she begins to think of Baxter. Paul is highly dejected as Clara keeps him at arm's length. Besides, Mrs. Morrell is very critically ill. Now we are in chapter number 14, The Release. There seems to be an uncanny bond between Paul and Baxter Davis. The former, that is Paul, felt guilty towards the latter, that is Baxter. Both of them seem to hate each other, but still they are drawn towards each other. In Baxter, there is a look of fear, mistrust, and hate. However, they seem to come to some agreement and achieve some respect for each other. Davis inquires about the health of Mrs. Morrell, and this makes Paul favorably inclined towards him. Soon after, he falls ill, and Paul helps him during his illness. When Clara comes to know about Davis' condition, she is obviously moved. She says remorsefully that she has been very cruel and vile towards her husband. She is critical of Paul. She admits that Baxter Davis has loved her with her 1,000 times better than Paul. She goes to see her husband, and there she leaves fruits and money by way of restitution. Paul himself helps in bringing about their reunion. The relation has been unsatisfying to him, and now he has his own troubles. The condition of Mrs. Morrell worsens day by day. She feels that morphia is bad for her and does not want to take it. Her eyes smile like those of a girl's. Paul seems to sustain her very life. She struggles with mortal pain. The suffering of his mother makes Paul inattentive to his painting. He can no longer work. The mother has a premonition of coming death. Paul goes to Clara for comfort, but she behaves coldly with him. She starts dreading him. There is fear and hatred in her eyes, even when she gives herself to him. Paul tells her that his mother is dying hard. She has a strong urge to live and wants to live even now. It appears she shall take a long time to die. He wishes that she should die soon. It is unbearable for him to see her dying, suffering that way. Paul goes once again to see Baxter Davis, who is still ill but gradually improving. He inquires about his mother. Paul tells him that he had been with Clara. She is tired of him. He advises him to make up with her and live with her. He himself would go abroad after the death of his mother. There is a short scene devoted to the meeting of Paul and Miriam. She kissed his face and roused his blood while his soul was apart. Writhing with the agony of death, she tries to soothe him and console him, but to no avail. Paul nurses his mother tenderly and watches by his mother's bedside night after night. But he cannot bear her suffering, so he consults the doctor whether something can be done to put an end to her life and thus to end her horrible pain. The doctor replies in the negative. She might live over Christmas, and it would be horrid. Paul is desperate. He crushes some morphia pills to powder and thus administers an overdose of morphia in milk to his mother. She drinks it unsuspectedly and succumbs to it at last. "You will sleep, my love," Paul said to his mother. At her death, Paul bewails the event most lamentably. Morel and others also express their grief, but the grief of Paul is intense. His hold on life has gone. His life was rooted in her mother, and now she was no more. Critical comments. Paul's life now seems to be a complete failure. He has, however, brought Clara and Baxter together. He himself cannot be helped. And above all, his mother's death has left him inconsolable. Clara despises Paul now and admires Baxter more. Paul feels lost as his mother was the mainstay of his life. And this is the last chapter, chapter number 15. The name of this chapter is Derelict. There is hardly anybody between Paul and his father. They look to each other's daily needs, that is all. Paul lives in Nottingham and Morel goes to live in Bestwood. Due to the death of the mother and rift in love, he is able to pursue art as he did. A kind of nihilism overcomes the young man. Things start looking unreal. Life looks nothing short of troubles. There is a kind of emptiness in the objects around him. Thus the time goes by. One Sunday evening he meets Miriam in the Unitarian Church. It appears to him that she is longing too for some hope in a heaven which the life has denied. Paul puts his hand on her arm. Her eyes dilate with fear. They go to Paul's apartment down Helm Road. There they swoop together. She tries to find his points of interest. Paul might have been reading ordinary novels. She wants to rediscover him, his position. Miriam is engaged at the farming college at Broughton for 3 months. They start talking about life. A man gives whole of himself to his work, whereas a woman keeps the vital part covered up. Paul, as she thinks, must be considering her older than what she is. Her bloom of youth had quickly gone. A sort of stiffness, almost of wood, had come upon her. She meditated a little while, then looked at him. Paul laughs mirthlessly. Miriam feels that the young man is wasting away his life. She does not want that he should ever be diverted by a person like Clara. A proposal of marriage is made, but Paul says that she loves him so much that she wants to put him in her pocket. He is now thinking of going abroad. Miriam gives a considered opinion about marriage, and now at this stage it would not be advisable to marry, perhaps never. It was the end then between them. She could not take him and relieve him of the responsibility himself. She could only sacrifice herself to him, sacrifice herself every day. Or was it a mate she wanted? Or did she want a Christ in him? Soon Paul becomes oblivious of Miriam giving his thought to his mother. He rejects the gesture of sacrifice on the part of the girls. He sees life dead in future. He would simply escape like a whistle out of her hands. The tragic hero knows no peace of mind. He gets obsessed with a kind of loneliness about him. "Mother," he whispers, "mother." She had been sustaining him all along, but alas, she is no more. He longs that she should pop from somewhere to touch him and have him alongside with her. Such is the end of Paul, the tragic hero of the novel. Critical comments. Finally, Paul is left a derelict. He has now no home, no anchor in life, and therefore drifts aimlessly. He cannot break, as it were, from his mother, and so he rejects Miriam's suggestion that they marry. Yet he is not totally devoid of hope as he walks quickly towards the town. He is now free of all demanding relationships and is entering life on his own for the first time. This is the end of the summary of this novel. Thanks.